Few regulations have been as closely watched as changes to the overtime exemption rules of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Enjoined by the court 9 days before they were set to take effect, the rules would have dramatically changed which employees could be classified as non-exempt under the FLSA and therefore eligible for overtime pay. The rules would have raised the salary threshold for overtime eligibility to $913 per week or $47,476 per year and included a provision to automatically update the salary threshold every 3 years beginning in 2020. Today, we've assembled a panel of experts to help you understand the current status of the overtime rule, what might happen in the future, and some suggested next steps for employers to consider. We are joined today by Maury Baskin of the Littler Law Firm in Washington, D.C., Eric Meyer of Dilworth Paxson LLP in Philadelphia, and Christine Walters, head of the 5L Company in Maryland, providing HR and employment law consultation services. Maury, I'd like to start with you. You're one of the lead lawyers on litigation challenging the overtime rule in the Eastern District of Texas. Just days before its effective date, the court stopped the rule by issuing a preliminary injunction. In your mind, what was the court's perspective in issuing the preliminary injunction?
Well, we argued strongly that this was a drastic change in the history of the Fair Labor Standards Act. The salary level test had always been set at a low enough number so that only the most obviously non-exempt people were excluded. And this new test that the department has come up with would have excluded more than 4 million employees from the exemption, even though it was conceded that they performed exempt job duties. And the district court had significant problems with that, thought that it was contrary to the legislative intent of the Fair Labor Standards Act, and even had questions about whether a salary test was permissible at all, because the Fair Labor Standards Act actually does not refer to such a test and seems to focus much more on the job duties. But he ultimately found that, without saying that no test was permissible, he found that this test that they've come up with just too radical to be consistent with legislative intent. And then beyond that, the three-year indexing was also not permissible.
And I know that some of those issues the court raised really echoed a lot of the concerns that many stakeholders expressed in their comments to DOL. What do you think might happen next in the litigation?
Well, it's a fast-moving situation. Initially, the department filed an appeal from the preliminary injunction that was issued by the judge. And keep in mind, there were two motions in front of them. One of them is a motion for summary judgment. But rather than waiting for the outcome of that, the Department of Labor filed this appeal to the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, and in addition to that, asked for expedited consideration by the Court of Appeals. That outcome will not be known. The Fifth Circuit will not rule until after President Trump takes office, which could well be a game changer, since it's anticipated that his people, certainly his nominee for Secretary of Labor, have a different view of the merits of this rule than the Obama administration had. We don't know for sure what they're going to do, but it's certainly possible that they will take a different position as to the merits of the rule, and so the case could go in a number of different directions. We could hear something from the district court. We could hear something from the appeals court. We could hear something from the Trump administration. For now, the only thing that's fairly certain is that the rule will remain blocked at least into the Trump administration, and we think for some time thereafter, and frankly, we hope permanently.
And Eric, I know that you've spoken with and heard from many employers and HR professionals, and many were in various stages of the implementation process when the rule was enjoined by the court, with some having already either implemented the changes or at least communicated them to employees. Given that, what do you suggest for those employers?
Well, there's a certain balancing test that employers need to engage in when thinking about how they're going to handle this going forward. In thinking about that and how to balance, we have these different buckets of employees. We have employees who weren't making enough money to qualify as exempt under the new salary level, the $913 a week. So some of those folks got raises. And the question is, are you going to take those raises back to the folks you gave raises to? I think that's going to be a tough sell, especially around the holiday time. People like to get paid more rather than less. So you're going to have to think long and hard before you take back those raises. In a different bucket, you have the folks who were converted from salaried to hourly in anticipation of the rules. So these are folks that employers were going to make non-exempt. They previously had been exempt. And you may want to move them back to salaried. A lot of folks don't like having to track their hours. There are certain benefits, either actual benefits or kind of imagined benefits of being a salaried employee. So that may be welcomed in terms of converting people back to salaried from hourly. And then in the other bucket, you have the folks who maybe were going to remain salaried, but you were going to try and limit their hours so that they don't cross over 40 hours in a work week. And obviously for now, that's not an issue because there is this moratorium, hopefully permanently, on the overtime rule. So there are a lot of different considerations that employers have to think about in terms of how they're going to pivot with this nationwide injunction.
So there's another group of employers that maybe felt a huge sense of relief when the rule was enjoined, and those might have been those that didn't prepare for that December 1st date. So those who hadn't implemented changes, what should they keep in mind?
Well, Nancy, candidly, I wonder how many of them are listening to this podcast. but the ones who haven't implemented changes, who are thinking about it but just kicked the can down the road a little bit, they were well-intentioned but just didn't get it done by December 1st, keep your eyes open, your ears open, and follow along to get the latest updates. Obviously, if this injunction becomes permanent or the Department of Labor under the Trump administration decides to take a different tact, then it won't become necessary to do anything. And the status quo can be the status quo. If there are changes that are going to be implemented, then these folks are going to have to be nimble if they want to comply. Otherwise, they may find trouble later on for noncompliance.
Christine, Eric mentioned a couple of scenarios, one where you may have communicated to employees that they had a raise coming, or even for those that you were planning to reclassify as non-exempt, you know, you may have put a lot of effort into having them understand why that change was necessary, and they may be now embracing it. How important, if you take a shift in your tactics, is that employee expectation? How should HR communicate the approach they're planning to take?
You know, I think in the last week or two, I've heard more than one person say, gosh, danged if we do and danged if we didn't, because they were trying to help employees not be surprised by the change. So some of them were communicating changes in advance. And I think that's great. You know, I find more often than not, a surprised employee is not a good thing to have. So setting employee expectations, I think, is key to the smooth implementation of any new rule, and probably never better illustrated than when it comes to our pay. So I would suggest, you know, as adult learners, we seek to understand why things happen as well as what's happening. So I think HR wants to communicate the approach they're planning to use by starting the conversation with the why. You know, hey, you may have heard, I want you to understand why we're making a change or why we're not going to make the change that we talked about a few weeks ago. And I think that can go a long way in helping employees at least understand and accept the change, even if they might not like it. At least they understand why it's happening. And hopefully that kind of builds a sense of we are in this together, and there are a lot of things that happen outside the employer's control, and we're all just trying to get a handle on this almost day by day.
One of the, I would say, special populations that were particularly affected by the rule was both the nonprofit industry and smaller employers. And I know that you've worked a lot with employers in those areas. Are there special considerations for these organizations?
I think every employer, regardless of size or industry or sector, everybody's going to have their unique challenges. And I think the impact to the anticipated change may have been felt no harder than for or by small businesses and nonprofits. And it's interesting, I find maybe ironic, that it's some of the small businesses, some of the small employers, I find sometimes are even more generous and flexible in the benefits that they offer. And so they were facing the challenge of uncertainty and trying to figure out how to balance and offset the fiscal impact that they anticipated. For example, some nonprofits serve underprivileged populations. And so if that entity's operating costs increase, they can't pass that along to their consumer. So any of those increases, they have to figure out how to offset that. And I've heard stories, you know, that they offered a fully paid meal period, and that may have to be abolished or reduced. They might offer other benefits that may have to be modified or, again, reduced or cut to offset the increase in overtime costs and travel pay and you know, a lot of other changes I think folks have realized come about when you convert an employee that today is exempt to non-exempt. There are a lot of little ramifications that everybody kind of needs to think through and calculate. So I've seen the smaller businesses and a lot of the nonprofits have some surprises along the way and try to figure out how to balance all of that, what's good for business as well as what's good for the employees.
So there's a couple of issues that I think the way this rule came about and then with it being currently enjoined, it raises some interesting issues for employers. I'd like to get the feedback from anybody on the panel. And one is, as a result of the overtime rule, it really gave employers an opportunity to review all of their employees' classifications. And that was something I think that was certainly encouraged. Now that the rule's been enjoined, are there any views that you want to share with HR professionals about how to approach what they've discovered as part of their review?
Well, this is Maury. I do think that's an important consideration in this judgment call about, all right, you've made a switch, should you switch back? A lot of employers were using this as an opportunity to reclassify employees whose classifications maybe were in some doubt because of the job duties tests. And keep in mind, this rule did not change the job duties tests. It only changed the salary level. But it was an excuse, really, to reevaluate and make changes for that reason. If the employees were converted from exempt to non-exempt because of job duties, then you might just want to leave them as non-exempt and not certainly not rush to switch them back. And in fact, my overall comment is now is a time to not rush to make any hasty decisions one way or the other. There's certainly no reason to suddenly act as if the rule was in effect, but also be careful because we don't yet have the final word. If you have already switched people, we're generally recommending people carefully evaluate what should be done before putting people back. And lastly, be cautious about state notice laws. A lot of states now require advance notice before you make changes to people's pay. And so if you make a switch one way and then you rush to switch it back, you may be bringing yourself into violation with one of these state laws. So there's a lot of different scenarios to think about, and employers should think before they act, as I know good SHRM members always do.
There's another issue that I wanted to get your reaction to, and that is there anything you think HR should be aware of in light of the fact that employers have taken different approaches in response to the rule and its injunction? So, for example, you may have, within the same industry in the same geographic area, one employer who decided to provide raises to keep certain employees exempt, while another employer may have made a different decision and decided to reclassify those same types of employees to a non-exempt status. What should employers think about if they find themselves in that type of a situation?
Hey, this is Eric. Thematically, a lot of what we've discussed here revolves around communication. Christine talked about setting expectations, especially when it comes to pay, and Maury addressed the possible misclassification issues and not acting too quickly and really mulling over and talking about what you're going to do before you do it. And this is a perfect area as well with folks who are in like industries or even broader than that as SHRM members. Take advantage of industry groups, resources like SHRM to discuss with others. Hey, you know, you're in the hospitality space. We're in the hospitality space too. We have this issue. Do you have this issue as well? If you do have this issue, we're thinking about doing X, but we're also considering Y. What are you guys doing? Talk to your lawyer. Talk to other HR professionals about just the variety of options out there. And you don't have to act so quickly, but make a well-reasoned decision about how you're going to move forward based on all this information that is available and so many different ways to communicate and implement it into your workplace.
Are there any other final thoughts from any of the panelists before we wind up the call?
Everybody just keep watching the papers to see what happens next in this crazy case.
All right. Well, with that, I wanted to thank all three of you for providing insight on what's happening with the overtime rule and options for HR to consider as we wait to see what happens with both the court challenge and the incoming presidential administration. And for those of you who are interested in more information on overtime, please visit SHRM.org/overtime.